Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
So here's the thing. Cause and I have talked a lot about this, and this is what fascinates me about the Dubas/Keith model, is to my eye, it seems like the magic word is disruption and mistakes. And it almost reminds me of a Sean Payton in football who talked about how the number one thing that a coach can control is chaos. You want to create chaos on the other side because these guys are so good. If they're not confused or there isn't a mistake, you won't beat them. Like the percentages are so low. Yep. You have to take them out of, like I remember talking to, who was it? I think it was Mike Rupp. It was somebody anyway. But they were talking about how hard it was to play against Duncan Keith. And they said, it's not because he was fast or good. Because there are lots of guys who are fast and good. It's because you would try to pull a move on him and he would react in a way that you didn't expect. And you wouldn't know what to do next. Because these guys' patterns are so repeated over and over again. Confusion was the greatest weapon they had. And I kind of feel like the Leafs at their best, they'll never be heavy. They're never going to knock other teams off the puck. But they can create mistakes and they have to be opportunistic. And in order to do that, one, you need the puck. Mm-hmm. But two, you also have to be looking for it, right? Like, it's funny you say that about the cycle, right? The cycle for years was something that was, you know, there to build up lactic acid in the legs of the other team because you're starting, stopping, moving and all this. And it's just like this war of attrition that you eventually won. I kind of feel like that's sort of true here, but maybe more true is the skill will show when there's something to capitalize on. Let's just put ourselves in a position to capitalize on something.
Yes.
Does that make sense? I talked for a long time, and it could be the green tea.
No, it does. It does make sense. I just think skill can be, like, I'm thinking of Nylander, and when he fights to get the puck back, and it has nothing to do with his size.
Right.
When he's like lifting sticks and he's like really working hard to get it back, that's his skill coming out. And if he does that more often, they're going to have the puck more often. And I just...
And you see that with Matthews, too. Like, he's not going to lay out bone-crunching hits. But when he's activated, he's back-checking. But also, his stick is devastating. Like, he disrupts a lot of plays.
Yeah.
And so when he's activated defensively.
So I think that's, like, why when Dubas gets a little annoyed when... I remember last year when your question was, like, do you need to add one more... You need to add some toughness. And he's like, no, well, that's not who we are. Like, that's not the team we are. We think we can be tough with our skill.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with like some of their young players, especially their skill players, they can be tough in a way that it's their skill that's being tough, if that makes any sense.
It makes all the sense in the world. And it makes me think of something. I remember talking to Jeff O'Neill about Nick Lidstrom. And he said what was so hard about playing against Lidstrom was that he could undress you with his stick and never lay a finger on you. And it was partially body positioning, and it was partially just that he had such great hands that he could pickpocket you. And you never felt safe when he was around and you had the puck, and he didn't have to hit you. And I kind of feel like that's the way the Leafs can play defense. And in some ways, like, I don't think they're as obsessed about the defense because they want the forwards to be more active as the first line of defense. Like, don't make the defenders fix problems that don't have to happen because you've stopped them before they happen.
Yeah, well, Does that make sense? I've never...
You and I are asking if this makes sense a lot to each other.
Yeah, well, That's good conversation. I remember, I've never forgotten, I got to cover the Olympics in Sochi, and I remember it exactly, like, the room, the setup, and somebody asked Mike Babcock, who's the coach of Canada, obviously, at the time, you know, how has this team been so good defensively? And I'm paraphrasing, but his answer was, like, because we have the puck all the time, we don't need to play any defense.
Right.
And I think that's part of their philosophy. Like, if we have all of this skill, and we're just playing offense more than we are playing defense, that will matter less. Like, if we have Tyson Barrie in our own zone, and we're relying on his skill to get the puck out and onto offense, then it'll mean less.
And it does make sense. Yeah, and you and I have talked a lot about positionless basketball over the years and the advantage of having guys who can do two or three things simultaneously. I feel like we've never talked about positionless hockey as a sport. But I feel like this team could push.
Well, Keith is like doing it now all the time.
100%. This team's pushing towards that. Where, you know, I remember talking to you briefly via text, and maybe you talked about this in The Athletic. I'm not sure yet. But the idea of the stretch pass and the idea that your defense is the beginning of offense and how sometimes it actually makes more sense to start a Riley and a Barry in the defensive zone.
Because
they can get things cooking.
Experts.
Right. Like if you start them in the offensive zone, you know, if there's a change in possession, now you're asking them to work backwards with gap control, which isn't really what they're best at. You know,
yeah,
it's almost like.
Can they be vulnerable to cycles? For sure.
Sure. But if you're looking at optimizing potential, in a weird counterintuitive sort of way, your offensive guys in the defensive zone can start things in a way that maybe somebody who isn't good at a
breakout. Well, because when they get the puck back, they're keeping it. And so when Nikita Zaitsev gets the puck back, he's generally you're probably not keeping the puck. Like he's
right.
Either just firing
it. Well, and Cody Ceci is the frustration.
Same
right?
thing. So if you have more skill, at least you're probably going to keep the puck, which is good. And like that's been an emphasis on Alexander Keith. Don't give the puck away when you don't have to.
And I feel like where they want to go with this is have the forwards play more aggressively and create more disruptions and then have your defense be fast to the puck and create turnovers. And I think if I see this Leafs team play as well as it can, what you're going to see is a lot of passing lanes being taken away. And then when the puck is dislodged and it becomes a battle for it, the speed and the skill will beat out the heavy plodding banging for it.
Well,
Dubas
talked about
not.
That after they got Barry. He said, like, I think he's a bit underrated. I don't know if he's a bit underrated, but he said he can defend fast.
Right.
And
that's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Defend fast.
And I think that means just, and I think Jake Muzzin's really good at this, is it's eliminating things before they even start. Like, I talked to Muzzin about this because some of the guys in LA brought it up when I was talking to them about Muzzin. He said, like, he's good, really good at eliminating plays before they even start.
Right.
And you don't notice that as much. So it's a guy.
Don't start
coming,
no trouble, won't be no trouble.
Yeah, so it's a guy coming across the blue line and Muzzin breaks it up before they even have a chance to get it in zone.
Like Riley and
no zone time, no nothing, play gone.
Riley may not be the greatest defenseman in the world at gap control. But once you've gotten to that point, you're asking them to do something that's already in a danger position. Play your defense early so that the problems don't happen. And when you have skill and tenacity and the puck, that's how you do it. And I kind of feel like everything we're talking about here strategy-wise is ways that people haven't talked about hockey all that much. Right? And that's what makes the team confusing to watch, because when they don't do it right, you go, well, this doesn't work. But maybe it's a tweak as opposed to a reframing. And we don't know because the sample size is so small. I feel like what I love about this team is their confidence that a plan could work, a creative plan, and their willingness to commit to it. Like you've heard Dubas say, like, you know, Babcock gone. Like these are the kinds, like he's got all these hills he wants to die on.
Well, he did a good interview on Overdrive after Babcock was let go, I believe, and he basically said, like, I believe in this plan. If it doesn't work, then I'll lose my job.
100%. And that's been, like, GMs don't talk that way.
No. I mean, you can watch the Jays as kind of a counter to that.
I see you got your Dodgers cap on. Is that because of you?
No, I don't actually like that sign. I don't think it makes very much sense.
We talked about it on the other pod today with Maddie, and
I'm surprised.
It's a PR signing.
It's completely a PR.
It's a PR
signing. And I'm surprised there hasn't been more. From what I read, there's not a ton of like critical reaction to it.
Right.
It's
because
more,
people are just excited that they're back in the game.
Yeah, but anyway, that's
I'm sure. You know, we talked about how the Raptors influence the Leafs. I'm sure the Jays are looking at the other two teams and seeing the gap between them start to, you know, cut into their bottom line. They have three young stars and two budding superstars, and nobody's talking about them. And they can't afford to waste Vlade Guerrero, and they can't afford to waste Bo Bichette in terms of being a distant third option.
People
for a
aren't
going
to go to
See one starting pitcher.
To see Ryu.
I know.
Trust me.
But they will go to see wins. And
they're
they will go to see
that
pennant races.
I don't think they're going to win that much more this year. I don't think it's going
to
make any difference.
Which is why you and I agree. And we will write this down. By the way, I got some other Leafs questions I want to get to, but I do want to point out, I'm going to gloat a little bit. I do this with Matt, so this will make you part of the family. You and I, at the beginning of the season, I sent you a text saying, I'd rather have Brad Marchand than Nikita Kucherov.
I still don't.
And you think I'm stupid?
Yeah, I still don't agree.
Yeah, okay. Kristen Shilton from TSN 1050.
Yep.
I heard her on the station one time. She said something very interesting about the changes to the roster. And she said, Kadri, Gardner, Marlowe, Hainsey were all people that when things weren't good, either via example or vocally, could step into the gap and say, we got to do this better. and that she didn't feel like the young guys necessarily felt that they had earned that kind of place yet. When you look at this team, I'm not going to say leadership gap because that's kind of a silly statement, but do you see still kind of a figuring out how to get through problems with guys who are now suddenly superstars, paid, but they haven't been around a long time? Like, do you see a sorting out of how to make a locker room work?
I think we overrate that stuff.
Do you?
Yeah. I don't think that the reason that they didn't get off to a good start is not because they didn't have someone in the dressing room going, guys, what are we doing here?
But we all know that...
I don't buy that stuff.
That problems can snowball if you don't capture them early. Do you feel like there's a strong enough spine?
Through similar, not a lot of losing streaks, but they lost five in a row when Ron Hainsey was on the team.
Right.
I think that's a convenient media narrative to go to that stuff because it fits into what we think things are. I think the bigger reasons why they got off to a bad start is they had a ton of new players, many of whom were struggling to figure out how to fit in.
Chemistry.
They had key injuries. They were basically bringing back zero to start the year. They had zero combinations that had played together, no defense pairs. Janssen, Matthews, Nylander had played together like a teeny bit. So they had key injuries, new players, bad backup goaltending. You add all that stuff together and you underwhelm. I mean, if they had competent backup goaltending, they'd have, I don't know, two or three more wins and at that point, and maybe they don't fire Mike Babcock. I don't know.
And that's a big if, and it may actually be that this was the losing streak that helped them to get forward. It's the mistake that turned into the success. I've got a big picture question and then a bigger picture question, and then we'll get on with our day. The big picture question is, you and I are not in the prediction game, but what are you looking for in 2020? Narratives that you think will come to fruition or perhaps open up. We'll call them expectations instead of predictions.
I don't know what, like, I don't know what it's all going to be about the playoffs, right? Now, obviously, they have to get into
the playoffs. Which I was going to say, that's narrative number one. Do they make the playoffs? It's going to be the topic every day until April.
I think they make the playoffs.
If they're healthy.
Yeah. And then expectations of what else will have to happen.
Do you think Kapanen will get dealt?
I think they're going to have to make a trade.
Yeah, whether it's him or someone else.
Yeah, and that's like the issue, to bring it back to like Dubas. That's like the issue a little, like you can pick apart the Muzzin and Barry trades because you can go both ways. Like their defense is better. Like Jake Muzzin makes your defense better, but he doesn't totally solve everything, and neither does Tyson Barry. So I kind of feel like they need that one more piece. But like maybe they look at their team and maybe they say Muzzin and Hall can play against top lines. Maybe they think Riley Barry works. I don't know. Like, there's some things I'm certain about, like that Matthew's going to score a lot, that Marner's going to keep playing well. The Riley thing is interesting.
Tavares, too. He's going to get better.
Yeah, he's going to get better.
Riley is the interesting one to me because I don't know how to look at him. And you and I have talked about this. Another thing you think that I'm stupid about is I said, don't be surprised if Riley's dealt in the offseason. I think with asset management, I know you don't buy it, and I'm not saying it's going to happen.
They have no defensemen.
Well, you would get another one.
Yeah, but they
traded PK Subban for Shea Weber.
Right,
like you could get another defenseman.
Yeah, but
back.
Like every defenseman on their team basically is unsigned for next year.
Right, and this would be contingent, obviously, on making a choice to get Muzzin, perhaps to keep Barry, which I don't think Barry would even sign.
I don't think it makes any sense to sign a 31-year-old Muzzin and then trade a 26-year-old Riley. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, except that on the left side, you've got players who are coming up.
Yeah, but you're a cup,
Dermott's going to be
a cup team right now. You're not putting...
But you would get a lot for Riley.
Would you? Like, what are you getting that makes your team better than it was? Like,
balance on the back end. Better balance. Like, three better pairs as opposed to one really good one and a bunch of ones at the bottom.
Play that out. Some team is not trading... They're good defensemen. Why would a team trade a defenseman who's better than Riley for Riley?
Well, you wouldn't get one that's better. But
then what are you doing?
Well, but what if you got players? Like, you think Sandin's going to be able to play in the third pair next year.
Sure.
Right? And Dermott, hopefully, if they believe in him, is a top four guy.
Yeah.
Right. And maybe Justin Hall's proven that he's a top four guy too. And maybe it's Dermot at Hall moving forward. You hang on to Muzzin and you put him on your top line. But hang on, let me finish here.
I don't know.
So, like, I don't think they're going to keep Barry. And I don't think CeCe's back next year. Sure. But the other four could be. And you've got Sandin coming into here. So Riley's terms of asset management, his stock is really high right now. But he's also a guy who's the classic candidate for being overpaid in his next contract. Classic candidate.
Yeah, but he has like two more years.
Right, but that means he has value. And you could get more balance as opposed to having one better player.
I think this is one of hockey's biggest cliches, is the wrong word, but group thinks where you should have balance. I'd rather have the stars. I'd rather have Marner, Matthews, Nylander, and just find a bunch of like Dmytro Timoshovs and Pierre Engvalls than try to find like $4 million winger. $6 million center.
Look, it's not like the way Team Canada used to build its teams, where they tried to like actually create third and fourth lines. Like it should be about.
Yeah, but I'd rather have Riley at four.
But how many
stars
can you have?
Or five.
It's maximizing stars, but don't forget the flip side to that, which is also filling holes, right? Because the stars will create holes. Because within the cap system, with where the salary structure is at now, we've seen it with this Leafs team. If you have those stars at top dollar, it leaves patchwork in your back end.
Yeah, but Riley is an undervalued contract. Trading Riley does not make sense.
But he's an undervalued contract for somebody else, too. Like, if you look at asset management, like, look, I'm not advocating for this. I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised. No, I'm trying to think, like, if I was Dubas, what would I do? Well, I can't. Like, the classic fallacy is that we'll just give up one of our good players and get great stuff back. Like, you can't think that way.
But that's literally what you're proposing.
No, what I'm saying is you give up something really good and get a bunch of good. And this might be a case where you do it because
maybe you
have...
Do you remember the Vince Carter trade?
Yeah, but those guys weren't good. Do you remember the Victor Oladipo trade?
Yeah.
Right? Like, for Paul George?
Yeah.
Well, the Pacers are good.
Yeah, but that's like one in a blue moon.
Well, yeah, but that's
and
sort of
Riley
like saying...
Not Paul George.
No, Riley isn't, but it's also the same philosophy. Like, we've always...
You're basically saying you'd rather have a B and a C defenseman that you get back for...
I'd rather have a B and an A.
Yeah, but you're not getting a B and a B.
Yeah, but you could be getting a
B.
Yeah,
so
but you're also getting... You're getting a B in the sense that Dermott's going to need more minutes, and perhaps that you're getting a B in the sense that Sandin can come up and fill that role properly. Like, it's not just what you get back. It's also you have to create... Like, think of the forest floor, man. You got to clear space so some of these things can grow.
Listen...
And the left side is stronger than the right side on the Leafs.
Theoretically, both
on the ice and also in terms of the prospects that they have.
In theory. You don't...
They got no depth on the right side.
Yeah, but you don't know that... You don't know what... I don't know what Dermott is. I don't... Like,
yeah, I don't know either.
Sandin looks like he could be something. I don't know that.
True.
Those are pretty big gambles.
And Liljegren's playing well in the AHL, but you'll never know if he'll be good.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I agree.
So, like, I can't gamble that and trade... My best defenseman, if I'm...
Didn't you finish saying not half an hour ago about how the key to success is finding gems and coaching them up?
Yeah, it's a little harder to find first defenseman and second defenseman.
Is Riley really a first defenseman?
Yes, for sure.
Are you sure?
Well, he's like a 1B. But, like, you're not finding that. Those guys don't exist. Like, there's, like, how many one slam dunk number one defensemen in the league? 5 to 10?
Is Riley Chris Letang? Like the Pittsburgh Penguins were able to put a back end together that was anchored by Letang and a bunch of guys who did their jobs. But is Riley Chris Letang?
Maybe. I mean, he admired Letang. He doesn't... Letang...
It's not a crazy comparable, but I don't think he's as good.
Well, Letang also has been injured his entire career. And Riley, that has not happened.
My buddy Jeffy once said something funny about Letang. He said he could be on the ice for every goal in a 6-5 game.
Yeah. Anyway, you can't rule anything out. I mean, they traded. That's my personal David Clarkson rule.
Mm-hmm.
I can't rule anything out.
Nothing.
David Clarkson got traded.
And Dubas admires Ujiri, and Ujiri traded DeMar DeRozan.
Not the same. That I still can't believe that there were, and I think you were one of them who didn't like that trade.
I did like that trade.
Okay.
I didn't like it emotionally. But I did on paper.
Oh my God.
Look, because you're a millennial, and so you don't have attachments.
I just
everything
thought that
to
was
you
the
is,
most
everything
no-brainer.
To you is streaming, okay? I come from an era where you owned albums.
That was the most no-brainer trade. But anyway.
Yeah, but it hurt.
I have albums in my car. I have like a million CDs.
Yeah, but it's not real nostalgia for you. You're playing a part.
That's true.
Actually, you're a rare millennial. You're like a hybrid. You're a tweener. Okay, final. Oh, I got a quick sidebar. Why did Babcock thank Morgan Riley Like, it felt like when you go that far out of your way to thank one player specifically, and then a whole bunch of people not thank at all. Like, why did he thank Riley? Do you have any insight?
I think because that guy was with him from the very start.
Do you mean with him philosophically? Like, willing to do what he asked him to do?
Yeah. Like, Riley, people shit on Babcock a lot. But Riley is a very good example of Mike Babcock taking a good young player and making him better.
Yeah.
And it was like a very methodical way of doing it where, like, he had a plan for him and Riley, it worked.
And he went along with it.
That's one thing, like, you can't really say young players all, I don't know who you could point to that didn't really get better under his watch. Who? Like, did any of them not get
Probably
better?
Probably Nylander. I would say you'd like to see him at a different place in his development curve by now.
I don't know. You look at his first two seasons, 61 points as a 19 and 20-year-old.
Yeah, and he's still kind of that guy now. It doesn't feel like he found another
game. Yeah, but he's still, like, he's better now than he was when he started.
But he's not much better. And when you see a guy who's got that much talent as a teen.
I don't think that's true. He's much better.
I'm not sure that Matthews is much better.
That's not true.
I didn't say I was committed to
it. I just said I'm not sure. Should I extend?
Okay. All right. Well, then here's... No.
That's a big conversation. We have to have about.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I know. I feel like we need a beer now. Okay. Just quickly then. Why don't hockey writers talk more about what works in other sports?
Because hockey writers don't... I shouldn't say this, but hockey just writers don't know what's going on in other sports.
Are they right to not care? Like, is it just apples and oranges? Or is it... I see it as apples and apples, but I'm a generalist.
I don't think it's about not caring. I just don't think they're interested. The amount of people who I can talk basketball with at the rink is under two.
When
it's
I started
like me and Bruce Arthur, and that's basically it.
Well, it's good company to keep, though. When I started at The Fan was when the Raptors first came to town. And it was me, Merrick, and Stromboulopoulos doing our overnight show. Mm-hmm. And people were openly adversarial towards basketball. Like, it wasn't, they weren't indifferent. They were like, this sport is stupid. It was like the city got, like, hurt by the Raptors coming, you know? I've never understood the sort of territorialism around hockey. And I think it ties into that weird hockey is culture thing. It's like anything that takes away from hockey takes away from Canada. And I'm not saying the writers that you hang with do that. I'm saying, like, just traditionally, there's been this weird sort of fortress mentality around hockey.
I can only speak for me. Like, I just came up liking other sports as well. So it was, I don't know if that was true with a lot of the people who cover hockey.
Friedman actually knows a lot about basketball. And he was like, when I first met him. Yeah, exactly. And he knows sports. It's interesting to me that, like, if I say to you, Dubas is like a Daryl Morey, like, you can agree or disagree, but... Like, you can have that discussion. Yeah. But it feels like 90% of the hockey people I talk to would be like, so Morey, he's like what? He's NBA, right?
Yeah. It's a flaw.
Yeah. Well, especially because there's so much to learn from other ways of doing things. It feels like Dubas is very open to what works in other sports.
Yes.
Philosophically.
Studies it.
Right?
Yeah. Interested in what?
You know, like the Tampa Bay Rays kind of thing. Like, how do they manage to be so successful on such a small payroll?
Some of these guys, like Justin Hall, the two-year contracts, like there's some baseball to some of that stuff.
Totally. That's such money puck.
Yeah. It's just,
All right. Well, let's wrap. Buddy, I feel like we should do this more often.
Sure.
We covered a lot of territory, though. Like, that was a super general conversation.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, maybe next time we'll do, like, I had a plan to come in and do the Monday morning notes.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we skirted around them or may have addressed them sort of intermittently.
Do you have any one thing you want to discuss with that?
I don't think so, because it's like you say, the game-to-game thing is kind of hard. Like, I mean, Nylander was benched, but I don't think that's, like, meaningful.
I don't know. I thought that was interesting. It shows a different side of Sheldon Keefe.
What I find interesting was your observation, which is how many times can you do that before you start to alienate players?
That's why I was so surprised he did it this soon.
It feels like...
14 games in is like... And a night after, he was awesome.
But he's had him before, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, there must be some kind of thing where he feels like he can then follow up with a conversation, or at least there's a trust there somehow.
I'm working on a story about Keefe. And one of the things I've learned about him in his coaching background is he does not shy away from that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, you got to figure that guy, just given his past and his totally unconventional rise to, like he couldn't have had a harder path or more people willing to be obstacles in that path.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's knuckles have been bloody a bunch of times, like on his climb up the mountain to get to here. So
yeah,
I'm sure he's a nice guy and he's got the music playing at practice, but I'm sure he's the wrong guy to fuck with, you know, in terms of like how tough he can be.
Yeah, which is interesting because he's thought of as like a new school coach.
Totally.
And that's a very old school thing. Mike Babcock was thought of as an old school coach and never went that way. Never did that.
Right, right. And it's interesting because Dubas looks so young. Like he looks like a fucking pretend GM, right? Like the GM's kid. Mm-hmm. You know, you know what he looks like? He looks like when the owner has a team and he gives his kid a big job.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, oh, this is going to turn out well. Like, he just doesn't look the part mm-hmm. at all. But I'm sure Dubas is really tough, too. And when Babcock, like, I was heartened to hear that he wanted to pull the trigger faster. Not just because I thought Babcock should have been fired earlier, like, after the playoffs last year, but because I liked the fact that he was like, okay, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it. Like, he had the power of his conviction. You got to be tough to do that. Like, Babcock is a hell of a figure.
They also didn't do it.
Well, but don't you think that was Shanny stepping in? Like, I don't know that, but I would be...
Yeah, probably.
I'd give that one, like, 5-2 odds that was Shanahan saying, you got to give my guy a chance. You know, Babcock was...
They didn't do that. They did not give him
a chance. But they probably should have. And then that opening night embarrassment with Spezza was basically, like, the final power play. Like, unless they would have come out at, like, 100-point pace, he was getting fired after that first night. He basically... I'm sure he thought he was dead man walking. After not getting the initial sign-off, his ego was probably rubbed wrong. And that was basically him saying, you know, like raising two middle fingers like Stone Cold Steve Austin saying, you're going to get rid of me and I'm going to do it my way. That's how I read it.
I respect that to some degree. Yeah, I did not like how they handled that after last year.
You know, one thing I dig about you is you're a new school thinker, but you have an old school integrity. And mm-hmm. I think you felt like they could have done better.
I don't think they did right by him, Mike. As a person, leaving him hanging for like
the most important
days.
Part of the rebuild.
Yeah.
He was.
That wasn't great.
You know, I don't think that Lamorello was the right guy long term, considering that they had Dubas.
No, but I have newfound respect for like a lot of,
totally.
Of the stuff he did.
Because you know what, people laugh at culture, but I don't think so. Like when I think about my time at TSN, like one of the reasons why they do so much good stuff is because they're the kind of place that does good stuff and they will not tolerate anything below that bar. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember once laughing with some of the guys about some bullshit that I saw at another network. And he just laughed and he was like, we wouldn't do that here. Like, it was just so ridiculous to think that somebody could get away with the stuff I was talking about, you know? And yeah. I think Lamorello and Babcock, to a degree, were good for that.
I'm trying to think what the example was of what they did recently that I thought back to Lamorello. I can't remember what it was. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
It was something where I thought that would not happen. With Lou Lamorello. What's happened recently?
I don't know. You're the guy with the team every day. I'm just some goof with a cable package.
Hmm. I wish I remembered because it really surprised... Oh, I know what it was. Hmm. No, I don't know what it was. Anyway, next time.
Next time. All right. So open door invitation to you for 2020, buddy. Then you say bye, Bob, and then I do something. So you just say...
Bye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.